Revi, the fourth reading of Parshas Truma. We now move from the coverings to the walls. Chapter 26, the walls. Oh, we're building walls today. Is that okay? Chapter 26, verse 15. V'yosisa es ha-kroshim. You will make the kroshim, la mishkan, for the mishkan. And they will be made of atzei shitim oimdim, of acacia wood. This is a kind of cedar, and they will be upright. Now it says, v'yosisa la mishkan. It should have said, v'yosisa ha-kroshim mishkan. Why does it say La Mishkan? So the Eruv Chaim says, because the word Mishkan actually refers to the cover, the Kisui. And the cover, four of them, we learned about yesterday. And here we're talking about the Krushim, which is for the purpose of the Mishkan, meaning the tent is the covering. What holds the covering up? And the answer is the walls. So the walls are made to hold the covering up, so that the Oihel, so to speak, so that the covering is able to stand. Let's take a look at Rashi over here. Pasuk tezvav, v'yasisa es ha-kroshim, you will make the kroshim. So Rashi says, ho yoloi loimer, v'yasisa kroshim. You should make boards, not the boards. It doesn't say you should make the aron. It doesn't make you should make the shulchan, the table. It says the menorah. It says make a menorah, make a table. Make walls. No, it doesn't say make walls. It says make the planks, the walls. So there's a definite item here. And this is unlike Mashenever B'chol Dover V'Dover, unlike the way it's written with all the other things in the Mishkan. So what is the pshat? What does this mean? Why does the Torah say this? Umahu hakroshim. What is the meaning of the? Why is it a definite item? So Rashi says, I'll tell you why. Because this is me'oison ha'oimdim u'miyuchodim l'kach. This is from the boards or trees that were designated for it. Now you make the boards. The boards. The boards. The boards that were always prepared and ready for this purpose. Boards that were ready, prepared for this purpose. Rashi introduces us to some fascinating history. Yaakov Avinu, our father Jacob, foresaw prophetically that the Jewish people would require acacia wood, cedar wood, for some kind of special purpose. He knew this was the case, whether he knew it was going to be a Mishkan, or he just knew they needed acacia. He knew they would need this wood. So what did he do? Nata arozim b'mitzrayim. He planted the cedars in Egypt. Now really, there's a deeper history that Rashi doesn't introduce us to, because it's not relevant to Pshut HaMikra. Our narrative here with regard to the Krushim begins with our father Jacob, with Yaakov Avinu, bringing the trees and planting them in Mitzrayim. But really, the trees begin earlier. This goes back to Vayita Eshel. This goes back to Avraham Avinu's orchard and the oasis that he planted. And this ultimately goes back to Be'er Sheva, where Yitzchak tended the trees, and then later Yaakov tended these very same trees. And before they left the land of Israel, they uprooted these three generational trees. This is the original Jewish National Fund, the original Keren Kayemet Yisrael. They're already planting trees in the land of Israel. They came to Mitzrayim, not only with a splash, having a baby as they entered customs, but they also said, what do you have to declare? They said, trees. Trees? Yeah, trees. Lumber. But they didn't have lumber. It was trees. It wasn't lumber. It was actual trees. And, you know, for they probably packed the roots with soil or whatever to keep it alive through the desert journey. And they planted, Yaakov, you know, planted these trees in the land of Mitzrayim. And then, at a time of his passing, he said, there will come a day you will leave this country. Make sure you take the trees. The trees? Yes, he said. Uproot the trees and take them with you. God is going to tell you to make himself a mobile home, and it's going to be in the desert. Now, that's what Rashi says, so I guess he must have told him exactly this. They always knew that someday God would come live with them. See that it will be in your hands. You'll have them in hand and ready. This is what the famous Python, the liturgical poet, who comprised and composed prayers for different holidays. His name was Reb Shlomo HaBavli. He's just known as HaBavli. This is what the Babylonian Piyud writes, and this is in the Yetzer that many communities recite on the first day of Pesach. We recite Yetzer only in Rosh and Kippur, but in other communities they recite a Yetzer in addition to the Shemoneh Esrei during the repetition during Pesach as well as Shavuot and Sukkot. So in the Yetzer of the first day of Pesach it says Tas Mata Mizirazim. The cedars or beams of those who were encouraged, those who were kind of inspired and to be mizara somebody means to encourage them, to push them, to motivate them. So the pillars or beams or trees of those who were encouraged, those who were motivated, flew means it grew with tremendous alacrity. It went to its great heights. And these were kodesh batenu arozim, the beams of our home that were cedar. So in other words, this is a beautiful poem, but it speaks about the fact that the Jewish people planted these trees. And as the Rebbe once spoke about, this was a source of hope for the Jewish people in the darkest of days, in the times when babies were being pushed into walls and slaughtered and thrown into the Nile River, and people were undergoing so much torture and torment and persecution and beatings, killings, terrible stuff. So a father or a mother would take their child and they would go for a walk in Yaakov's little forest called Jacob's Forest. So you see these trees here? These trees were planted by our father Jacob. And someday we're going to leave this country. And when we do, we're going to take these trees with us. And Hashem is going to come live with us. And we're going to use these trees to build a locale for the presence of God. And in this way, they had a tangible reminder of the eventual redemption. And this served as like inspiration in the lowest of times. And that's where the Paitan talks about this, because this was like a major deal for the Jewish people. Atzishitim imdim, so now you know the history, and now you know why it says hakrashim, now you know why it says the cedars. Now it's interesting, because elsewhere it's brought down, me'ayin hoyalahem krashim. And from where did they have cedar? Where did they have boards? Where did they have beams from? Rashi doesn't do that. Why? Because in Pshuta Shel Mikra, me'ayin hoyalahem, whatever, they bought it, they got it from somewhere. Hashem said he wanted cedar, go find cedar. It's less of a question. The big question is the hey hayidia, the definite item, hakrashim. That doesn't fit. How could it be hakrashim? The means the thing we know about, we're talking about, we need, we use, and therefore Rashi introduces this medrash. Hatzishitim oimdim. Rashi says oimdim standing means shehei oirech hakrashim zokof, that the length of the beams would be upright. Lamaila bekiras hamishkan, upright, just like you have to plant, you have to actually put the tree the way it grew, like an esrog. You have to hold an esrog and a lulav the way it grows, otherwise you don't fulfill the mitzvah. These beams had to be upright, with the roots on the bottom and the tree tops on the top, upright lumber, and it had to be standing upright. V'loitasa haksolim bikroshim sheichim, do not create a log cabin, which is the intuitive or natural way to build it, where you lay the logs one upon the other. No, not the way done here. But rather, this has to be upright, and the beams have to be shoulder to shoulder, so to speak. And it has to be legoiva haksolim, for the height of the walls, keresh al keresh, beam by beam. So very interestingly, the Kli Yakar says that the word hakrashim la mishkan is the same numeric equivalent, the same gematria of the words Yankev Avinu not alahem arazim bimitzrayim. That's what the Kli Yakar says. The same numeric equivalent of the words Yaakov planted cedars in Mitzrayim. Same words. And he says that this, the number is, you listening? 995. The number, the equivalent, the gematria number is 995. So you're saying, okay, so it's 995. So what? How do you write 995? In Hebrew, in Gematria. You could figure this out. You could do this. Tuf is 400. That's the highest number we have. So it's tuf. Right? Okay. And then it was a thousand ninety-five. So you write tuf resh, which is 200. So that gives you 1,000. And then tzadik is 95. What does that word spell out? Tuf resh tzadik. It spells out the word titratze. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar Yankev HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yankev said to God when he planted these trees, V'me titratze al masa ha'egel. How will you forgive my children after they foolishly make a gold calf. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Tisratza, I'll tell you how. The Atzei Shittim. With the Atzei Shittim. This is the building of the Mishkan. But really and truly, the way it's explained in the Chassidus, especially in the Maimon Basi Lagani, that the Atzei Shittim represents Shtus Tikdusha, the holy folly. So the answer is, how do you atone for the stupidity of sin? And the answer is, holy folly. By Shtus Tikdusha. Shtus Tikdusha is the only thing that can be the counterweight for Shtus Tiklipa. It was a stupid thing to do, make a gold calf. You just heard from God, don't make me another gold calf. That was downright foolish. And the answer that was beneath rhyme and reason. And the way to be able to combat that is to go beyond rhyme and reason. This is not measured devotion, but devotion that's a leap beyond. And that's the Tisratza. And that's connected to the idea of the Krashim. Okay, so in haste, because Rosh Chodesh today, and we have a long davening, please turn to page Reish Yud Ches in your Biurim book. And here, the Rebbe quotes a very interesting statement from the Gemara in Masechet Sukkah, page 45b. He says, Atzei Shittim Oimdim, standing Atzei Shittim. Now, you know what standing means sometimes? Standing could be a physical posture, but standing could also be it lasts. It's going to last. So the Gemara says, Shema Toimer, lest you say, Ovad Sivram Ubatal Sikuyan, their use has now expired, their hope is over, there were Atzei Shittim, and now they're finished. Don't say that. Talmud Leimar, the verse comes and teaches me, Atzei Shittim Oimdim, this is the standing beams. Oimdim Le'olam Le'olam Le'olam, standing forever. Standing forever. In other words, these beams will be used in the future, and they will have purpose again. They will be repurposed and once again used for the Shechina. Uvdas Nitzchiyusay Shel HaMishkan. The notion that the Mishkan, which is the handiwork of Moshe, lasts forever, is actually seen in the words of the Medrash, where the Medrash says, and this is a quote from Tana Develio in the 25th chapter, Rabbeinu B'chai talks about this, and he elaborates. It says that the Mishkan was never destroyed, because Maisei Moshe Nitzchim Heim. Anything Moshe Rabbeinu put his hand to or was involved, it lasts forever. So if the Mishkan was never destroyed, what happened to it? The answer is Nitman. It was hidden away. In the future that we hope and pray is very soon to come, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yahweh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God will come, V'yashter B'teichei K'midi R'sheina, God will bring His Shechina back into the Krashim, just like it once was. So the Krashim once formed the walls that housed the presence of God. And the Krashim will again, in the future, form the walls that will house the presence of God.
Where is it buried? In Shiloh?
We don't know where. If we knew where it was buried, somebody would find it. It's hidden away somewhere. So this is the question. You're telling me that the Mishkan is going to get put up again. That's what our sages are telling us. The Mishkan was in the time of Moshe. The Mishkan will be in the future. When Mashiach will come, the Mishkan will stand again. So the Rebbe asks two important questions. When the future finally arrives, the third Beis HaMikdash is going to rise. And the third Beis HaMikdash is going to eclipse the Mishkan in its spiritual magnificence by far. After all, the Mishkan is the handiwork of people. But the third Beis HaMikdash, it says about that, Migdash Hashem Keinenu Yodecha. That's the Migdash of God that your hands formed. And as the Gemara tells us, and Rashi quotes this, Bonoi O Meshuchlol Hu Yigala V'Yavi Mishamayim. This Mishkan will come completed from the heavens. And it will, silver platter is given to us. We're not going to build a Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash. This Beis HaMikdash will just come from God. So the Rebbe says, if you have a Beis HaMikdash built by God, who needs a Mishkan? What's so great about God's presence in the Mishkan when you're going to have God's presence in God's home? Now he said, I want to live amongst you, build me a temporary dwelling. We're delighted. We're so happy that after living everywhere and nowhere, he's living with us. He gave us instructions, told us what materials to bring, told us exactly what to make. We're very happy about that. But in the future, when Mashiach comes, God says, I'll build myself a house this time. God's going to build a Beis HaMikdash. And that's why it's going to be an eternal Beis HaMikdash. So if God builds an eternal Beis HaMikdash, who will need the Beis HaMikdash that was fashioned by the hands of people? Question number two, why will the Shekhinah reside in the future in the Mishkan if you want to bring back what was? Why not bring back the second Beis HaMikdash, which is supposed to be the grandest structure ever built by people? Why not bring back the first Beis HaMikdash, where the Shekhinah resided for hundreds of years? Why the Mishkan? I mean, the Mishkan only lasted 40 years. And especially even later on, when they spread the Yerias, when they spread the coverings of the Mishkan to build the house of Hashem in places like Shiloh, there it was stone walls with the same coverings that Moshe made. But the beams no longer served the purpose. So the beams were the first thing to be retired. The coverings lasted much longer, hundreds of years later. So the Rebbe suggests that the answer is to be found in a statement that the Gemara makes in Masechet Bava Metzia on page 38. The Gemara says, commenting on human nature, Adam reitza bekav shaloi. A person wants his own measure, yeser mitisher kavim shachavede. A person wants his own measure better than nine measures from somebody else. In other words, we all take pride in what we did. If you worked on this, if you did this, if you created this, you made this, you feel good about it. That's just human nature. Davar shehisig b'emtzayis amul v'yigiyah, something which we were able to acquire by dint of intense labor and hard work, goyrim la'adam oyne gadol harbe yeser midvarim shenitin le'matana, feels a lot better than getting it for free, even though free is the most popular four-letter word in the English language. And if you say free, you get everybody's attention. The truth is, when things come for free, we don't value them. Most people who win the lottery do not have happier lives as a result. When they work hard for the money, then it's earned, they feel good about it. Nobody wants to feel like what we refer to elsewhere as nama de chisuf, a bread of shame, where you never worked for it, you never earned it, you didn't really deserve it, it just landed in your lap. So this is the human nature. Of course, we say we want free, because we always want the easy way out. But long-term happiness is not achieved by getting things for free, but rather by working hard and achieving them. There is nothing more satisfying than achievement. Okay, that's very nice. Very nice, interesting detail, a curio about human nature. The Rebbe says, no. There's a message here. The Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, the third Beit HaMikdash, is very, very lofty and extraordinary, and its virtue will outshine anything that ever existed before. It's coming from heaven. It has one little problem. It has one little drawback. You know what that is? It's for free. It's a gift. We didn't work on it. It's Yavei, Yigala V'Yavei Mishamayim. It's going to show up. It won't be our donations. It won't be our artisans. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will live with us. However, the Oinig, the pleasure we'll feel, will be somewhat incomplete. How come? Because we didn't do it. You didn't build this, a person once said. And if you didn't build this, you don't delight in it. You don't value it, and you don't appreciate it. There's something missing. And therefore, the Rebbe says, Yishra HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechinasei Gam B'Mishkan. God will dwell with us in the third base of Mikdash, but He will also dwell in the Mishkan. Shenivna B'Kecheseyo B'Emzeyseyim Shal Kol B'nei Yisrael. Only the Mishkan, not the first base of Mikdash. That was made by artisans. Not the second Beis HaMikdash. Only the first Beis HaMikdash had everybody's involvement. Nobody stayed home. Everybody showed up. Everybody brought a donation. Everybody did whatever he or she could. Kadesh B'nei Yisrael Yizku Gam L'Shleimezu. Hashem wants us to have everything. Not only the highest level of divine presence, He wants us to feel good about it. And therefore, what we'll take pride in is the Mishkan, because this was our effort and our commitment and our donation and our devotion. And this is the reason that Dafka the Mishkan is going to rise again, not the Beit HaMikdash, the first or second Beit HaMikdash, because the Bat HaMikdash were built through artisans, through individuals, not through everybody. V'lo yagide am Yisrael kulon, rak HaMishkan, was only the Mishkan that was built with everybody's contribution, with everybody's effort. That's where it feels best. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wanting us to feel good, will put His Shechina in the Mishkan as well. And that's the deeper message of the Atzei Shittim Oimdim, with many obvious lessons, like get to work, let's do this, because achievement is the happiest way to live.
So when you say